We have a really ambitious title today, okay? The Secret to Lifelong Happiness. But I figured that if the Chafetz Chaim can make the promise for long life, then I can make a promise for lifelong happiness and feel safe. How realistic is this? I think it's really realistic when we start talking about what the secret to happiness is. But it's especially realistic right now. During Sfira, we know that it's a time that people work on themselves. Usually people attribute that reason to the fact that we are trying to compensate for the fact that lo nahagu kavod zeh lazeh. But besides that, there seems to be something about the time that's very conducive to springing forward spiritually. Of course, we know that Am Yisrael went up 49 Shari Tama in that time, so it's a very conducive time to growth. And on Pesach, we bring a karban with barley, and we know that we count towards, right, Sefirat HaOmer. On Shavuos, we bring a karban of wheat. And barley is an animal food. And in the Sivah Shalom, it talks about this idea that we start with barley, we end off with wheat. Wheat is human food. It's refined. Not only is it refined, but in order to access its nutritional benefits, we have to refine it further. So it's that symbolizes the fact that it's a time from which we can go from really whatever Hashem gave us in terms of our own core abilities that might be still undeveloped, as represented by the animalistic, and bring it forth to the human in 49 days. So when we talk about the secret of happiness, it's a secret that I think we can attain very easily, especially during this time, but very easily with just a change of perspective in life. A true little anecdote. When my kids were a little bit littler, we were all sitting around the table. I don't allow them to have Coke usually, except for Shabbos. And I don't remember the occasion. They became really savvy about the Jewish calendar and knowing all kinds of, pseudo kind of occasions and causes for celebration that would warrant soda drinking. You know, besides Rosh Chodesh, they were way past that. This coming Sunday is a big one with Pesach Sheni. And they all got their Coke. I'm scared of caffeine with kids. So, you know, they got their one cup of Coke. And then one child felt that someone else got more Coke, right? Four-year-old child. Than that child got. And I just remember the entire time this child being miserable. And it wasn't that they were miserable that they didn't have the half an ounce of Coke, but they couldn't enjoy that cup. Not for a second did that child enjoy that cup. So it sounds really juvenile when we tell an anecdote like that. But a lot of people live life, at least part of their lives, this way. I think that's what it means when it says, I'm going to be referring to your two sheets as the one with Yuma on it and the one with Source 10 on the top, because we're going to have to go back and forth. Rabbi Elazar HaKafar Omer, HaKina HaTava VaKavon Motzina TaAdam Min HaOlam. What does it mean they take us out of this world? There are other things where we're promised no Olam Haba, God forbid, but it doesn't say that. It says Motzina TaAdam Min HaOlam, which I will translate as takes us away from reality. It completely disconnects us from reality. Because if you could say, think of other things that would make a person suffer. You say illness makes a person suffer, God forbid. Genuine poverty could make a person suffer. We can unfortunately think of many causes for suffering. But what these three have in common is that they don't exist in reality. A person is suffering because of their own self-created reality. In these three cases, tava, desire, doesn't say hunger, right? Hunger, we understand. You give somebody bread and they're no longer hungry. Tava, desire, which implies desire for something that's not a necessity. Kavod, the desire for honor. And kina, jealousy. All these three things don't exist unless we create them within ourselves. And therefore, a person is really disconnected from reality when a person suffers. And a person can suffer immensely from these three self-created, not real realities. The kina, the tava, the kavod. We're going to be using two terms as interchangeable, and to justify that, we're going to look inside the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah says, on the page with the source 10, Amar lam tu ru'u izo hi derech tova shiyidbak baha adam. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ayin tova. The opposite of that, of course, is ayin ra, which is what a person should stay away from. And if you look in Maharal, source 4, v'hinei ayin hara hu koach hakina ba'atzmo ba'kavod ruach gvoha. Ayin hara is kina. Source 5, v'teida ki divrei Rabbi Elazar hakafar, heim divrei Rabbi Yoshua. K'mo shamar Rabbi Yoshua ayin hara, amar Rabbi Elazar hakafar kina. V'ayin hara v'kina heim davar echad. They are one and the same. When we talk about ayin ra, we're talking about somebody who looks at somebody else and is not happy with what the other person has, which is also what we could say about jealousy. The Maharal absolutely equates the two. We talk about Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, the Gemara tells us that they died mepnei shelo nagu kavod zeh lazeh. There are two things that prevent a person from giving another person honor. Okay? This is not the same as not liking another person, which is different. This is not valuing and not showing the other person that they are valued. The Ali Shor, Rav Volba, says that when you have an object, if you want to know how valuable it is, you could see how much somebody's willing to pay for it. And even if somebody's a professional and they work, certain tasks are, of course, going to get a higher salary than others. He said, you know how we show that a person has value? By one thing, and that word is kavod. That is how we show the erech, the value of a person, through the kavod we give them. When we talk about Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, we want to know what it means not to have kavod for someone. There are two sources of lack of kavod. One is jealousy. One is the feeling of angst that you have something that's rightfully mine, or you have something and I can't take it because I should really have that. And the other one, which is more directly related to Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, is that we know that the kavod that they didn't have for each other was manifested in Torah learning specifically. Meaning it was a situation of my way is right and your way is not right. And that's the second cause besides jealousy of lack of kavod for one person to another. And really it's the same thing as jealousy because I feel like someone's infringing on me. Erroneously, I might feel if you're right, then I'm not right. You're taking away from my correctness by you articulating a contradictory philosophy. So it's me or you. Just like it is with jealousy, it's a bag of potato chips, which is not a bag of potato chips, right? If you take most of the bag of potato chips, there's not any potato chips left for me, but we're talking about individuals who are humans, whose abilities and intellectual opinions really can't take away from our own. So I want to look inside for a moment to see how far this connection goes between jealousy and ayin ra, and then we're going to talk about the perspective that completely obliterates and annihilates jealousy from the world. Okay, but before that, let's see how intensely horrible it really is. If you look in source 6 on the sheet with the Yuma, these are all from Maharal, Nesivos Olam Nesiv Ayin Tov. Upireshta barzeh ki miyuchad bal hakina lehefsed. A person who's a jealous person has a unique in a bad sense, a unique amount of lacking. Ulehayader is lacking as well. Yotar mikol hamidot haraot. He has lacking within him more than any other midot raot. Kasher hakina hu davar header, she'eno rotze betov, shehu l'chaveiro. The definition of kina is that you don't want the good that is for your friend. V'davak ba'adam hazeh haheader. And therefore, what clings to this person is a lacking in every single part of his personality. Kasher yish lo kina al hatov sheyish lo chaveiro. 7. Umisha sover be'yisera shemimcha kol choli zo ayin hara. There is the perish that the promise Hashem makes that he will eliminate all illness. This refers to ayin hara. Yadua ki ayin hara yish bo koach ishii soreif. It has the koach of fire, the same energy that fire has to burn and destroy. Umekabel ha'adam hezek. A person receives enormous harm, min ha-mezek, from the harmer, meaning from the jealous person. Asher yesh lo koach ishi soreif ki ha'ayin hazeh soreif kimo ha'ish, shehu soreif. He he articulates the power in Ayn Rand, and instead of thinking of it as something very, like, spooky, Ayn Hara, what does it mean? Do I believe in it? Do I not? Okay, we're just going to define Ayn Rand here, the way that the Maharal does, as jealousy. That if a person looks at somebody else and feels like you shouldn't have it, there is a mechanism, without getting into it, that really could cause the object of the jealous person's eyes and vision and jealousy to actually experience harm and deficit because of the person who's jealous of him. Okay. So we're going to look now both at a practical perspective, meaning what we could do practically speaking to prevent jealousy, and also what we could do to change our entire perspective that prevents jealousy. First, the perspective. Source 9 is from Rav Dessler. Alpima batalion muvan bepashtut, sha'adam ha'shawef l'ruchniot, a person who's spiritually striving, ro'et kol kinyanei ha'olam, rak b'torat kelim avodato, a person who's a spiritually growing person, sees every physical thing in the world, whoever it is, as a kli to achieve, as a vehicle by which he can achieve higher levels in avodat Hashem. And the type of tools that are given to him and the amount that is given to him are the exact ones that are conducive for his job. If something, and we're not looking at this just as objects, it could be a talent, an ability, intellectual gifts, is given to one person, and it's not given to his friends, it means for sure it is appropriate for the tafkid of his friend, and it's not appropriate for him. One might say it would even be bad for him. When I lived in New York, I lived next door to a contractor who built a lot of houses at the time, and I imagine still builds a lot of houses. And at one point, he was building houses right on our block. And it's great entertainment for the kids. They get to, it's really very exciting if you ever watch, you know, day by day, the way the house goes up. So we would always go outside, take a snack, watch the building. And since I lived next door, this is what I would see. At one period of time, certain workers would pull up, and he supplied them with everything. So the people who built the frame, they would do the, you know, wooden, American wooden frames, nails, would get their tools. Exactly what you would imagine, wood, nails, hammers. Then finally, when you got to a later part, which is very exciting because you would see the pretty tiles, right? So the tile people would come and they would get their tiles and their mortar and whatever they would need, and somewhere in the middle, the masonry people would come and they would get their tools. So I think Rav Dess was describing the circumstance in which, if you can imagine, the guy who only knows how to assemble the wooden frame gets the tiles, and the guy who's supposed to do the tiles get the nails and the hammer, because that's exactly how he puts it. He says the kelim that are given to a person are for his avodah, and if he doesn't have it and his friend has it, that means that it's not for our tafkid. We're here to accomplish a tafkid. That's it. We can stop right here. We won't stop right here. But that's it. If we could imagine constantly, not imagine, but look around and have that perspective on life, that when I look at someone else, no matter what they got, whether it's material possession, whether it's what I perceive as a better relationship with their mother or their sister, or whether they were accepted somewhere that I wasn't accepted to, if everything I look at, I say, well, I guess that, isn't that interesting? That's what she needs for her tafkid in life. I don't need that for my tafkid in life. It's an incredibly liberating perspective. That tool is not necessary for me. And my tools are not necessary for somebody else. That's the perspective. That's what I'm talking about when we say that we can, in a short time, especially since it's a conducive time to spiritual growth during Sfira, propel ourselves from a place without that perspective to a place where we have that perspective. But Rav Dessler gives practical solutions as well, which are obviously more limited because the perspective is something we could carry with us all the time. But we'll look at those as well. Source 8. The quote's supposed to be laced in Balais Dayan, right? There's no situation where there's no justice. Obviously, there's a court and there's justice in the world. So he asks the question, Ubema Hashem Chaveiro Shemitat Adin Pogadbo. This poor victim. How's that justice that this poor victim can suffer just because someone else has unhoned midot and a more immature emotional sense of what's his and what's other people's and is a jealous person? In some way, he caused it. And he goes on to say that if a person flaunts what they have for the purpose of flaunting it, not accidentally, then this is obviously something active that the person is doing that invokes and provokes the jealousy of someone else. And so the person is not completely innocent if someone else is jealous of them. And then he goes on to say, right under the underline, two lines under the underline, Kainam Ruzal, I'm sorry, one line under the underline, Harei baduku minusehu shemi she'eino chai ba'ar atzmo klal v'hu notin v'lo notel b'chol inyanav ish kaze eino me'orer kinat klal. Any person who gives everything he has is never inspiring jealousy. What does that mean? If you think about a person who's incredibly generous, you never look at them and think, oh, they don't deserve to have it. So he says this is the second practical tool that we have, to look at other people. I'm sorry, to be a person who other people look at and feel like we're only giving with what we have. And of course, giving, again, is not limited to the material. Giving with our talents, giving with any good fortune that we may have.
Is there a difference between they don't deserve what they have and you wanting it also?
So that's a very interesting question, because when you read in the sermon, there's always that question, what does jealousy mean? Does it mean that I want him not to have it? Or does it mean that I just want it? Okay, so there's no question that when in Maharal, it means that in some way I don't want him to have it, because that's what it means, Ayin Ra. He talks about the word narrow. I look at him with like a narrow eye, like I just wish he wouldn't have it so good. In the Maharal, there's no question that he equates with Ayin Ra. It means, it doesn't mean I want to take it away from you, but it means I don't want somebody else to have it. Okay, but from the perspective of Rav Dessler, when we use the tool model, for sure, it includes even if I just want it. Because the fact that I want it and I don't have it means that I'm not understanding and accepting the fact that it's not one of my kalim that will be conducive to my avodat Hashem in my life. He cites Yosef, and it says about Yosef, specifically about Ayin Ra, it says that Yosef is Ali Ayin. Anybody from Shevet Yosef is above Ayin Hara. There's a story in the Gemara about an Amora who put himself in a certain situation where everybody would be looking at him and he was very good looking. And somebody asked him, don't you think you're going to invoke Ayin Hara? And he said, Ein Abisha, Ayin Hara, is not sholeit over me. It has no shlita because I am a descendant of Yosef. And we have this Kabbalah that Yosef is Ale Ayin. Why? As Rev Dessler says here, it's underlined, Ayin shelo ratztala zun mima she'ino shelo, ein ayin hara sholetet bo. This is the idea of giving from what you have as opposed to taking. Okay? When he was in his master's house, in Potiphar's house, he never took anything. It also implies he didn't take his wife, Potiphar eshet Potiphar. And therefore, the ayin that would never ever take anything that wasn't his, no ayin hara could ever be sholeit. So we have this idea again of giving and rather than taking, being a protective measure against ayin hara. On a deeper level, in terms of the perspective, this helps us to branch out from material possessions to life circumstances. On the source with the 10 on the top, the source sheet with the 10 on the top, but going down to source number 12, this is from Nesivo Shalom on Vayikra. The underlined part. V'akadosh Baruch Hu ma'amid l'chol echad et kol ha'nesibot v'atnayim sheyuchal al yadam l'taken et asher mitafkido l'taken. A person, Hashem sets up for a person all of the circumstances and conditions through which a person could be mitaken, can correct, work on, uplift, whatever is his tafkid to be mitaken, umilimalot yiudo v'tafkido be'olamo, and to fulfill his destiny. Yiudo is his destiny and his job in life. Kol tnai hachayim, every single condition of our life, anything you can think of, anything that makes up the conditions of our individual lives, v'gashmiut v'ruchniut hatovim v'haraim, kulam nitnu lo k'fi hashayach l'tikun olamo, sherak al yidei tnaim elu yuchal hagia liyiudo. Only through these circumstances, even if they're suffering circumstances, can a person reach their takana and their yiud, their destiny in life, through his life circumstances. And therefore, there's never, again, a cause to look at somebody else and feel like it is someone else's life circumstances that we want. It's very ironic that from Rabbi Akiva, we have the Talmidim who died, b'nei shelo nagu kavod ze baze. Also from Rabbi Akiva, we have v'hafta l'reacha kamocha. One would have thought that here is the greatest teacher of all time, Rabbi Akiva, who's probably the greatest name that we associate with the Torah Sheba Al Peh, that as a successful teacher, which we know he was, that he would have conveyed to his Talmidim the strong sense of Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. That's an irony that we're going to talk about in a minute. What would this include that touches on our topic? So if you look in on the second source, on the sheet that has a 10 on it, in Rambam, Yad HaChazaka, Sefer Amada, Hilchos Deos, Perek Bav, Halacha Gimel, Mitzvah al kol adam lehov et kol echad ve'echad miYisrael, kigufo. It's a mitzvah to love every one of Yisrael, of Am Yisrael, as he would his own body. Shenemar v'hafzal re'acha kamocha. Now, just in case that we think that we have to like every person we meet, it doesn't mean that, because he doesn't go on to give us tips about how to like everybody. It's a practical mitzvah. Lefikach tzarech l'saper b'shvacho, you have to talk about an appraising way about somebody else. I mean, just like none of us would want anybody to talk poorly about us, we would only want people to talk well of us, so too we should only speak well of others. Vilachus al mamono, and to care about his money. Kasher huchas al mamon atzmo, just like he'd care about his own money. Verotze bechvod atzmo, and he wants his own honor. Vamitkabed bekalon chaveiro, anybody who aggrandizes himself, who gives himself honor because of the lowering of his friend, the denigrating of his friend, ein lo chelek la'olam haba. That person, very strong, has no chelek la'olam haba. If he has to lift himself up by putting someone else down, he has no chelek la'olam haba. We talked about this idea that if we look at another person, besides jealousy, sometimes what prevents kavod is looking at a person or even a group of people and saying, they're wrong, I'm right, or they're wrong, we're right. But if there wasn't this tendency to look and say, they're wrong, I'm right, and to be able to say, nothing that they believe infringes on my beliefs. Meaning if somebody says something else, if somebody lives in a different way, I am who I am. It doesn't infringe in the same way that we talk about jealousy. It doesn't infringe on me. And therefore, this idea of kavod and the jealousy are so connected. And this idea of mitkabed b'chalon chaveiro, as if I have to put somebody else down in order for me to be correct or more correct than the other person. Regarding the irony of Rabbi Akiva and his Talmidim, if you look in source 14, which is also from Nesivos Shalom on Vayikra, Zesha Yagamkein, Sherabbi Akiva, Rabban, Shel Chavdalid Elef HaTalmidim, Amar Vahavdal Recha Kamocha, Ze Klal Gadol Batorah. Sheze haklal shebitul hayeshut va'anochiyut. Anochiyut like anochi Hashem, the me. This klal means that the nullifying of me, the nullifying of yeshut, from the word yesh, of my existence and myself, getting rid of the I, tluya kol haTorah kula. In doing this, the entire Torah depends. Can I get rid of me from the picture? Can I take myself out of it? V'lachin lumatze hitzgaber habal davar, which if you're reading the previous paragraph, he talks about the Yitzhahara. However, as opposed to this idea of being able to actually nullify the self and make room to honor someone else, the Yitzhahara really, really went after Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. So let's bring this down from something strange sounding about the Yitzhahara. Meaning he did teach them the Haftarah Yachachamulcha. And since he taught them as a Klal Gadol Batorah, it was a theme for him. And because it was a theme for him, it was a theme for them. And whenever somebody is seeking to excel in a certain area, the battle gets more and more and more and more difficult, right? Which is what we call battling the Yitzhahara, the internal battle. The more a person is focused on it, the more a person tries to wage war specifically in this area, the Nisiv HaShalom says, the more the Yitzhahara attacks. B'kol ha-kochot, l'achshilam b'inyan zeh, to make them fail. U'mitatam hayta b'imei ha-sfira. שימים אלו הם ימי ההכנה לקבלת התורה, ובהם העת לתיקון המידות. And no coincidence is that he says that they died during Sefirat HaOmer. Everybody knows the famous Rashi, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Ka'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. The Midrash there says that the prerequisite to Matan Torah was. Now, there are a lot of things you could think of as prerequisite for Matan Torah. A lot of different midot that would be helpful. But it said that Achdut was the one prerequisite to Matan Torah. Perhaps this relates to Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. The idea that they're going to be learning Torah. If there's Torah learning, there are going to be different ideas. And there has to be room for all of the different ideas and different perspectives. So he says it was specifically during this time, which on the one hand can be a springboard and a conducive time for growing in this area. But when the expectation is so high, meaning it had to be that way, for Kabbalah and HaTorah had to be Achdut, on their level, nothing else could be tolerated. I heard a story that I subsequently heard from many other sources, but this story, when I heard it, I heard from Robertson Heller, who said that she heard it from someone who was one of the players in the story. So I guess that would be secondhand. Which really brings home the idea of kavod for others. A person innocently went to look at an apartment in Israel, and she went to see the apartment, at which point a neighbor came in and said, "That apartment? How could you buy that apartment? If she sees that she could sell that apartment, then she'll never fix it." "Fix what?" This innocent apartment searcher says, "What's the matter?" Says, "This person is horrible. She extended her house in a way that it blocks my merpeset. I have no light in the house. It's depressing for me all the time. I'm sad all the time. It's dark in my house all the time. She changed my life." You can imagine that the potential buyer was discouraged from buying the apartment. But as God's hand would have it, everyone ends up soon thereafter in the same place. Okay, back on the ranch, something else happens. There happens to be a woman unrelated to the buying and selling of the apartment. And this woman has no children for 18 years, and she goes to Chaim Kanievsky. She says, "Give me a bracha." He says, "I can't." He says, "The teva, for someone who has not children for 18 years, it's too hard for me. I can't." He said, "But there's somebody who could. Go and find someone who's insulted and doesn't insult back, and then ask them for a bracha." Okay, so she leaves, on the one hand, a little discouraged that she can't get a bracha. On the other hand, there's some hope. And she goes to a wedding, and you may know or not know that in Israel, Israelis do not do seating at weddings. You walk in, and there's open seating for everyone. I'm still trying to learn from that, because I spent about 15 hours doing seating for my bar mitzvah that I just made, but open seating. So who lands at the same table? The buyer, the seller, the person who went to see the apartment, and nearby, but not at the tables, the woman who needs the bracha. And for some reason she comes to the table, but she's not sitting at the table. And suddenly she's there when the extender of the apartment sits down. And the downstairs apartment, who is very upset, who we heard from before, is sitting there and turns to her and says, "You know who that is?" To which the woman sitting next to her says, "No, I don't know who that is." "So sure you do. I've told you all about her. That's that horrible, selfish woman. She only thinks about herself. Look what she did to the apartment. How could there be such a person?" On and on. The woman who extended the apartment sits there, and she doesn't say anything. And she continues to not say anything. And then she feels a tap on her shoulder. And this woman says to her, "Can you give me a bracha?" She says, "I don't know who you think I am. I don't give brachas. Please, please. I haven't had children for this many years. I want you to give me a bracha." Of course, she gives her a bracha. And of course, a year later, they always have a boy in these stories. Did you ever notice that? Why is that? I'm not sure. A year later, she has a baby boy. So we know this. Very often I find this, that you go with some very big quandary and ask a big rabbi a question, and he just pulls something out, and you're like, wow. But meanwhile, it's just something straight in the Gemara that you could have found, but it's living with the belief that therein lies all of our solutions. So, of course, it says, Hanelvim ve'inam olvim, ketzeis Hashem mishpig bruraso. Somebody who insults, who is insulted, but doesn't insult back, has the strength, right? We know nowadays what that means. Maybe the Chachamim knew also about the amount of energy that we can get from the sun, that we can harness from the sun. That person has that kind of strength and energy. A person who, as we would say, takes it but doesn't dish it out. A person who hears himself being insulted and being put down and doesn't give back. Why? So is there a greater testimony in the world to Kavod Habrios? Kavod Habrios is one thing. Kavod of the person facing you is one thing. But what happens when there's a choice I have to make? It's my Kavod or their Kavod. That's the choice. Because we all know that you feel like your self-esteem is a little bit restored when somebody says something and you have a line that you could shoot back at them. It makes you feel better. And you restore your dignity in a certain way, one kind of dignity. So there's no greater testimony to the value that that person places on the kavod of the other person than even when it's a choice between it's my kavod or his kavod. Even then, it's his kavod before my kavod. To tie it all in together, the reason that this is the secret to happiness is because these three things, kinatava kavod, the reason motina da aldam manalam, disconnects us from reality. A person can have X set of circumstances that are real. Let's say a person really doesn't have enough money to buy food. That's real. It's easily, somewhat easily solvable. If they would have money to go to the supermarket, then they'd have food. But what about the jealousy? Anything else that a person lacks in life, they can be lacking something, but with that they can add to themselves the self-created anguish of jealousy. Frequently we see it's people who aren't really lacking things. We can look at people who it looks like they have everything and they can still be jealous. So it has nothing to do with objective reality. It's a state of anguish that people tend to put themselves in. And therefore, if we can extricate ourselves from the chains of jealousy, we can be, right? What's the secret to happiness? Sameach b'chalko. We can be happy with what we have. It's self-created. So a person doesn't need to be able to fix every wrong in their life at all. A person needs to just change their perspective and know that if it was good for me in life, I would have it. And if this was my tool by which I was going to achieve the tafkid for which I'm breathing, walking, and existing and functioning on this earth, why Hashem put me here, then I would have it. And if I don't have it, I don't need it. It takes away all of the anguish that's self-created of I think I need to have that even if that's not material, even if we're bigger than that and what we want is not material things, we want that relationship somebody else has, we want that talent that somebody else has. If we don't have it, it's not for us. We get rid of whatever anguish in life we create. There's that perspective that changes everything. And then we can look at everybody else and be so happy and have the Ayin Tova because we know I'm happy they have that. They need that. That's what they're supposed to have in life. And then we don't feel infringed upon like our like somebody's invading on our territory and our turf. And that's a direct key to achieving kavod for other people. Because I respect you. I feel threatened by you if you're infringing on my turf. In those two realms we talked about, if you have something that I want, or if the fact that you're right is going to mean that I'm wrong, right? But if you're not infringing on my turf, then I'm not threatened by that, and I can acknowledge the value that every person has. And to tie it into the story, we told the story in a very practical way, but it's an unbelievable how this story that's gotten around is an unbelievable metaphor also, because if you see what was wrong with the person who was so upset, she felt that someone else had the power to take her light away. They built a room, they took her light away and brought darkness into her life. So both in a very physical way, in a material way, in a structural way, and in the more philosophical way, the way that some people causes some people jealousy to feel like someone else can actually infringe, where we see here nobody can infringe on what we have because Hashem decides what we have, right? We have to give ourselves the ability to have that light in our lives and to be able to work on this time that's very conducive, work during this time that's very conducive to showing kavod zeh lazeh and to all extricate ourselves from self-imposed sadness and to always be happy, hence the secret to lifelong happiness. So, any questions?